Hello, and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Cyberbullying could soon earn you hefty fines, even jail time in Michigan. That's thanks to a law signed by former Governor Rick Snyder just days before he left office last December. Starting in March, online harassment will be a misdemeanor, and it could result in 93 days in jail and a $500 fine. And if the cyberbullying results in the death of a victim, it's a felony carrying up to 10 years in prison and or a fine of $10,000. But just how effective are stricter laws in curbing cyberbullying? Here now to help answer that question is Samir Hinduja. He's co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center, also a professor of criminology and criminal justice at Florida Atlantic University. Samir, how do you define cyberbullying?
We define cyberbullying as willful and repeated harm inflicted through the use of technology. And of course, that technology generally means, you know, cell phones, social media, even gaming platforms.
And can you give us a real life example, something you've studied that sticks with you, of what cyberbullying looks like and what it could mean in kids' lives?
Sure. Perhaps on some social media platform, an individual decides to hurt somebody else by creating a fake account, maybe to impersonate them, or decides to post really hateful, embarrassing, humiliating, or even threatening content related to them. And then perhaps everyone, let's say at school, gangs up on that individual after seeing that post, either through likes and comments and shares.
So it can spread like wildfire is probably an understatement.
Absolutely. With so many youth spending so much of their lives online, we know that these sorts of things can go viral in a heartbeat.
Michigan is one of more than 40 states with cyberbullying laws on the books. How does our law compare with the other states?
Yeah, so, you know, surveying the landscape of laws, I first want to say that I am grateful to politicians and legislators who continue to bring this issue up because it is important. We know that youth cannot sort of separate their online lives from their offline lives. They pretty much seamlessly move from one to the other. And so I'm grateful for the attention that they're giving these issues. With that said, though, I'm wondering if some of these laws are a little misplaced with regard to, for example, in this case, the penalties and the punishments. And the reason why I say that is simply because when you think about youth, when you remember being an adolescent, the reality is that we don't tend to be deterred by formal policies and punishments that are being prescribed. And then when you think about bullying and cyberbullying specifically, you just wonder if youth are ever going to stop in a moment of, you know, heated emotions and think to themselves, oh, wait, there's this law passed in my state. And if I do this, then perhaps I'm going to be a misdemeanant or even a felony. And so for that reason, I think I'm going to put down my phone and maybe count to 10 or go get some ice cream or call a friend and vent. Typically doesn't work that way.
You know, having I'm a parent, I've been through this, and that was what I was just thinking in real life. How many, you know, high school or middle school kids are going to go, oh, wait, Michigan now has a cyberbullying law before they write some nasty thing on Snapchat about a classmate?
Absolutely. It's really hard to sort of have forethought, and we do need to give grace to youth. But with that said, of course, there should be some sort of penalties on the books. And when it comes to laws overall across the United States, I'm in favor of those laws which actually mandate a number of helpful, proactive, and preventive measures that can be implemented. For example, some states are mandating anonymous reporting systems in schools, and we find that students actually do want to speak up. They just don't want it to bite them in the butt, and so they hesitate and often suffer silently. Secondly, we see laws which require schools to implement more school climate programming. And school climate simply is a term which involves aspects such as belongingness and connectedness and morale and peer respect and school safety and even school spirit. There's various sorts of specific strategies that can be implemented to increase those elements. And when they are increased, you have a lot less behavioral problems and a lot better academic achievement and attendance and all the educational goals you want to see. So again, that's the sort of thing that I'm in favor of when you're thinking about laws.
You know, to correct a behavior, it's helpful to understand what causes that behavior. What do we know about why people are cyberbullies?
Yeah, when it comes to the motivations and rationalizations involved in cyberbullying, it's pretty typical and intuitive. Many times it's, you know, peer pressure, wanting to look cool, wanting to do it just because it's seemingly fun or entertainment, even though, of course, that's very dysfunctional and twisted. I would say that the top reasons include jealousy and envy and insecurity. And I'd also say that many times kids just struggle. They're struggling at home. They're struggling with their own identity and self-worth. And many times they take it out on others, just like, as we've seen, unfortunately, adults do as well.
And I guarantee that there are people listening to us who will say, hey, you know, bullying's a part of life. You know, what is different about cyberbullying than what parents or grandparents saw in their school years before there was a digital era?
Earlier, we alluded to the reality that mean texts or hurtful comments on social media or, you know, trolling examples across gaming platforms, they can quickly go viral. And so many times, the amount of victimization that takes place appears to be repeated because we never know how many people are being involved, how many are piping up and issuing further hurtful and cruel and vicious thoughts. And then the target simply takes it to an awful extreme in their own mind about their reputation, about what their future looks like. You know, youth, they're very impressionable. And when they deal with quote unquote haters, they just feel like this perhaps is the commentary on the rest of my life.
How do you balance the rights and the well-being of children who are being bullied with the ones who are doing the bullying, who are also children and teens?
Yeah, I think about that often, Cindy. And I feel that this might be an unpopular answer because many individuals are just looking to exact some sort of penalty or punishment against offenders and wipe their hands of the situation. But the vast majority of those who offend, I feel like they struggle in the very same ways that targets or victims might struggle. I feel that, you know, our kids are not sociopaths. They're not bent on creating mass havoc. I feel like they just deal with their own issues and then they act out dysfunctionally in some sort of twisted way of coping with whatever it is they're facing. So I'm rather a big fan of promoting empathy and compassion and just getting kids to understand what might get under their own skin, what might push their personal buttons and make them really, really hurt and struggle. And so hopefully that in time deters them from doing the same to somebody else.
Because I have to wonder, what do you think will be the consequences, perhaps unintended consequences, of making more young people part of the criminal justice system?
Yeah, as a criminologist, I feel so strongly about that. And I think you'll agree, whenever we label someone as a deviant or a misdemeanant or felon, it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. At the very least, that person internalizes that negative label and perhaps believes that the education system, families, their parents have given up on them. And we never want any child, truly any child, to internalize that message. And instead, I think that we should flip labeling theory and self-fulfilling prophecies on its face and instead give the kids certain identities that are positive, label them in the best ways, such as being, you know, great encouragers or great listeners or great helpers, and identifying what's actually wonderful about them. And hopefully they'll rise up and embrace that identity whenever the opportunity presents itself.
Are there things that states can do apart from imposing jail time and penalties, cash penalties, to prevent cyberbullying? And how do you fold schools into that?
I feel like we just have to make sure that the states continue to resource schools. So many administrators, counselors, teachers that I've met and that I work with as we get a chance to connect with so many schools across the nation deeply and personally care about this issue. They have been touched because of students under their purview or even children in their own home. They want to do the right thing, but they're overextended and under-resourced. And I truly believe that what laws can do are just making sure that those motivated educators have what they need to implement programming, curriculum, to bring skilled speakers as part of a comprehensive educational plan, and again, focus on school climate, building resilience, building empathy. I think those will really, truly bear the most fruit.
And then let's take it into the home, Samir. How can parents effectively monitor their child's online life to see if that teen is being bullied or is a bully?
When I give talks to parents groups, you might imagine that the most popular question is, hey, what can I install on my child's phone just to constantly be in the know as to what they're doing on various social media platforms? And that, of course, makes me cringe because while it may be an easy solution, it sort of undermines any open, candid line of communication you would want to build and maintain with your child. And so with that said, I feel like many adults, many parents are hyper involved in their kids' offline lives, but very hands-off when it comes to their kids' online lives, perhaps because they're unfamiliar with technological jargon and don't want to sound foolish when they use the wrong term. Perhaps they believe that the schools are covering this in some capacity, and they are. It's just that we need a united front, and we want parents to be involved in their online lives, not in a critical, judgmental, sort of waving your finger and squinting your eyes type of fashion, but instead just asking positive questions about, hey, how is technology benefiting your life? What apps are you loving right now? What are becoming a little lame that you and your friends are moving away from? Is there anything that you might be able to create down the road to be the next disruptive app? What are some trends you're seeing forthcoming? And then over time, as you demonstrate a little bit of familiarity, you can start into the more probing questions like, hey, have you ever received a message that has made you feel unpleasant or a little bit creeped out? Or, hey, I bet that you've probably dealt with, you know, a troll or someone who's been cruel to you on social media. What did you do? Did you report it? Did you block them and sort of virtually cut them out of your life? Did you talk to someone at school? Did you get emotional support from friends? And so I feel like these conversations just need to happen a little bit more often, a lot more often, to be honest.
Samir Hinduja is co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center and a professor of criminology and criminal justice at Florida Atlantic University. Thank you very, very much for sharing your work and your insights with us, Samir.
Cindy, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.